Uploading. Toonami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am a Jito Ryo master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
My Toonami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your Prom Tom host, Thomas Prom Tom Metis, and welcome to a fabulous another episode. On this episode, we are covering Season 2 of Sekiro. Yes, last week we covered Season 1, and this week we are covering Season 2, which is entitled, in fact, Pure Engagement. This series of 13 episodes is a bit more darker. It gets more into the serious part of the story of Sekiro, which, again, I didn't go over this last week, but, you know, Sekiro is based off a manga that's in Young Gaijin, I think, serialized by Square Enix. So, yeah, based off a manga, and it does pretty much follow the manga almost to a T. Where it is in the manga right now is actually past where Pure Engagement goes. It goes into these artifacts and stuff, which they hint to at the end of the series. Of course, there's also been no announcement of another series after this, so we will talk about that when we talk about the ending, but that's later on in the review. But let's get to it, because we don't have any emails or iTunes comments or anything like that. Unless you want to count the spam of, hey, I'm a Nigerian princess and I found your blog to be absolutely wonderful. If you click this link, we can, form a money-sharing scheme together. You know, unless you want me to read stuff like that, you know, we have nothing. Otherwise, you know, in a week, I get, like, 40 emails. But I don't think it counts. So, let's get right onto it, shall we? First, we have our cast, and of course, cast means our returning champions. Joe McDonald as Minato Shishashi, Alexis Tipton as Musubi, Tia Ballard as Kusuno, Colin Klinkenbeard as Matsu, Lita McKay as Tsukumi, Stephanie Young as Kazahana, Leia Clark as Homaru, Monica Rial as Mia Asama, Jamie Marchi as Uzume, and of course Chuck Huber as the vile ripped from a Superman 1920s comic mad scientist game master. God, he won't shut up. Why is he continuing with this bad, horrible joke? Hiroto Minaka. Synopsis, we basically continue to follow Minato Shishashi, a second-year Ronin wannabe college student who is now a Ashikabe. An Ashikabe is somebody who is the master to beings known as Sekiri, who are usually more often than not but either busty women, cute girls, or bishoujo boys. And we do see a more variety of different sexes of Sekiri, but we'll get to that later. Anyways, as we continue to follow the journey of his harem, not only does he add to his harem, but we also get twists and turns as a member of the Maison Izumo household is in trouble, and by the end of it, they have to do a mad dash up the MIB tower to save a friend. So with all of that being said, let's get into our review of Sekiro, PR engagement. Welcome back, and so let's get right into our review. We're going to start off with music. It's going to be really odd, because again, I've never done something to where I've reviewed two 13 anime seasons that were basically the same thing back to back. I mean, I probably could have reviewed this together, but I decided to split it up, because they were two distinct seasons. But, you know, again, it's following the same storyline. So again, not like, for instance, there's not going to be much of a change as far as character designs are concerned. Though there is some stuff to talk about that. And mostly it's cosmetic. Mostly it's how did they improve and that stuff. But with that being said, just a bit of a warning. This might be a shorter, I don't know. We're going to have to see how it goes. But it might be a shorter than normal episode. Which, for those who have probably been, wary of my 2+ hour episodes, this is a nice change. But again, we'll get to all that when we get to all that. Let's start off with music, as I said. And of course, let's start off with the opening and closing theme. And again, two wonderful themes. I mean, first of all, the music is pretty much the same with both themes. I'll get to the closing theme in a second. The opening theme is this sort of, really sort of, not J-pop, but sort of J soul. It's sort of R&B, sort of, not bluesy or R&B, but as you heard, it's sort of this sort of melody love song. Same sort of instrumental use as the first series opening song, and I do love the melody here. And again, once again, I love how the opening theme is really sort of a sign. It sort of tells the story of what the series is going to be as far as emotional impact. Because the difference between this song and the opening song in the first 13 episodes is that it's more serious. It's as if to sort of match the more serious tones that we're going to feel in this series. Serious, and yet does have that hope, and it sort of transparents what the series is. There's a lot more serious tones, some very dramatic things that happen in this series, and yet it has a very hopeful ending. You see that in this song, because there's a more serious tone, and you sort of feel the drive, and sort of, I'm blanking on the word here, attentiveness to the things going on, because there are more serious things going on, and I apologize, I'm floating here because I'm blanking on a word, and I'm going to think about it later, and I'm going to hate myself for forgetting this word. But you feel that in the song, and I very, very much like that. I love that you have sort of this attentiveness and this sort of serious, oh, things are getting real now. We have to put more attention to this. We have to put, you know, we have to be serious now, you know, to the more serious situation that's going on. And I'm using the word serious like Tim Tebow uses the word, I'm so thankful to be a Jet. Rain freezes, you gotta hate them. But with that being said, let's move on to the closing theme. And again, closing theme, very much like the closing theme in the first season. And again, I think I kind of like the closing theme again here over the opening theme. Has the same instrumentals. Again, there's a lot of brass. You know what? First, let me play it for you and then we'll get into it. There you heard it. And so you sort of understand where I'm going at. I mean, play it with what I played last week. Again, same instrumentals, a lot of brass there, which, again, I love. A little sort of this almost marching band-esque type of use of the brass. But again, at the same point in time, also jazzy. And, you know, again, going back to the fact that, you know, all of these opening themes are sung by the, I won't call them the main four secretaries, you know, the Japanese, you know, voice cast members who voice Musubi, Kusuno, Tsukumi, and Matsu are the singers in these songs. But, you know, again, I love the jazzy themes here, and it's just cheerful. It's sort of, I think a great way to be an ending for these episodes. I think my particular favorite part is, you know, if you watch it with sort of the closing credits, it's the part where they're going down and they show Minato sleeping, which, by the way, I love sort of the ending theme animation here, to where, you know, the first part is they show him sleeping, them, like, all of them, like, slowly coming into the room to sleep by him, and then they show him at the beach having fun, and then it all ends with, you know, him waking up with them, him and Mia there, and getting all scary, which I just find funny. But again, you know, sort of the tonal aspects of it, you know, I'm trying to remember. Again, from a tonal and sort of instrumental aspect, I love that piece. I love sort of the stopping and the starting and all thing that goes into that part of the piece. I really, really enjoy it. At the end of the day, these opening and closing themes are really perfect for this series, and they really help make the series work. So, again, it's very enjoyable to hear pieces that, again, were similar, but different. And, again, that's also something I want to emphasize. They're similar to what we had in the first season, but very different. And they sort of show an evolution of the series, even though they are doing, to an extent, the same thing. As for as the overall score, again, it's much of the same music and much of those same tunes. I mean, really, not anything to say different here. And again, this is not a, you know, oh, they didn't do anything different, it's a bad thing. They didn't need to do any bad thing. It's a continuation of the series, so you're going to hear the same music. In fact, it would be bad if you heard completely different music. You know, there's some more interesting pieces that they add on to it. But again, you do get a lot of the same pieces here. You know, same staff, same everything. You know, I will say this, the score has seemingly improved in its quality. And again, it's something with this season. There's improvement over quality here, which will be even more apparent when we get into animation. But yeah, definitely same music. They added on some pieces that really worked. None, unfortunately, that can come to the top of my head. Though, actually, one just did finally came to the top of my head. The piece at the end where, you know, Musubi is having the duel with the Black Sekiri. Name is escaping me. Which I really should look up because kind of important when we get to story. But yeah, the music there, sort of the serious tones in there, which was used throughout the series, very much liked. So that's it pretty much for music. We're actually going to do something different. Usually this is a place where I say, hey, let me play a promo for you. But once again, you know, kind of short. So instead, we're going to get right into animation. And so the first thing, of course, to talk about animation is the overall style. And again, not much different here. You know, it's pretty much the same style. You know, character designs, the art, it does have those soft color. Well, I shouldn't say soft color. It's in general, it's the same design. But the soft colors are a little less soft, but yet more fuller. You know, overall, when it comes to the overall style, the best thing I think I can say about it is they really have improved on their style. They've done little things here and there to improve their style. You know, while it does have that same soft feeling, they've kind of toned it down so it's not so soft that some of the effects really stand out against it. And they've also improved the effects, which we'll get to in a little bit, so that the colors of everything, whether it be, you know, especially when it's dealing with, you know, hand-drawn backgrounds with sort of computer effects, they blend more. And really, that's the thing. Everything feels like it blends more. Like, again, they've had experience working on this series now, so they could have they were able to go back, mind you, see their mistakes, and really fix their mistakes. Which, again, that whole thing about the evolution of this series as it continues, and then getting better and better and better at the series. You know, it's that thing of, you know, when people start off doing a series, they never worked with the characters, they never done any of that. You know, it's kind of hard to, you know, get it just right because you never had experience. But then when you get to the second and third and fourth season, you've had experience working with these characters, working with these artists, and so on and so on. So you're able to improve and you're able to get better. On to character designs, and we're just go down the list hopefully real quickly, because a lot of the improvements here are really subtle stuff. They really don't have anything to do with design, but again, maybe more character movement. Minako, you know, or I should say Minato, I don't know why I said Minako. Minato, again, pretty much same, has the sort of L look going for him, and though when he's, I guess, I do kind of like that they use more of sort of what is kind of his second costume, if one could put that, but he has this sort of jean look. And for that aspect, I really like it. Because again, if there's one, and I didn't say in the review last week, I think I maybe mentioned it passingly as sort of a joke, but it is the thing that most of the time you see Minato in the first series, he's in that sort of white, sort of what seems almost like muscle shirt, or like very small shirt. and jeans. And I kind of made the joke, hey, it's L's look, but done right. But it is the thing where if you watch the series, and if you've seen Death Note, you're like, wow, he looks a lot like L. With the whole sort of, I can't believe I'm going to make this joke, but with the whole sort of redneck, Demi jean and jacket look that he has. Redneck fashion tip number one. Say no to denim jumpsuits. And I'm quoting Jeff Foxworthy on this, so he the king of rednecks. Y'all know it. But, yeah, Demi jacket and Demi jeans. You know, it gives him a distinct look that makes him different and really does make him stand out from saying, oh, he looks just like L. Even though the face does look different, it was something that people could have said in the first season. Didn't really look like that, but could have been said. But this gave him a different look and really showed an evolution of his character as it was. Musubi, again, pretty much the same. A lot of the same outfits that she gets used in the first season. Same bubbly attitude. Again, I think they just, you know, are able to be more well-defined in drawing her. Again, that experience of drawing her really added to sort of, you know, the sense of her character. More experience being able to draw her. Kusuno, again, same thing. If there is a difference, it is in the fact that her, because whatever her character was in the first series, was more tentative and kind of more afraid and less assertive. But in this series, she's a lot more assertive and she does seem a bit older, you know. In the first series, it was almost as if she was like maybe 4 or 5. She seems more 6 or 7 here, you know. And again, a lot of that has to do with design and the way she acts, which again, we'll get to that when we talk about acting. But yeah, I love sort of that evolution that you see there. Matsu is Matsu. Really nothing has changed. Same outfit, same everything. Though I will have to say this, I love her. I love her disguise. And, I mean, you see it at the end, but if you have the DVD, like, for instance, I did, because, you know, unlike last week where I watched the entire series on Netflix, here, I recently bought the Blu-ray DVD double pack from Best Buy for $45 of Sekiri: Pure Engagement. So, by the way, I also got to watch this in Blu-ray, which included an OVA called Gossip, which, by the way, all of the Sekiris in are absolutely hilarious in it. But there's a scene to where, you know, the first part, they're going to get their bodies measured because it's body measurement day for the Sekiri, which is a classic sort of etchy harem comedy trope that gets used a lot, for those who don't know. And so, of course, she learns that she can't go, but she's saying this, and then Minato turns around, and she has the disguise, like, I can't wait to see it, and she goes, and there's this hilarious scene of her, and Minato has her, like, the dress, and she's, like, running so fast, she's causing smoke, and it's all, like, if you've ever seen, like, a car try to peel off, you know, or at least a car that's hooked to something and it's trying to go and it's going fast, it's causing smoke. It's sort of that same bit here where Minato's grabbing, trying to prevent her, like, come on, Matsu, no! You can't go like that! Those guys makes me laugh. Not really anything to do with character design, but that just made me think about that. Skumi, they add a bit of softness to her design to really show how her character has mellowed from the first series. She's still somewhat oblivious and somewhat of the hard ass that she is from the first series, but she's, I think the best way to put it is, she's less Tsunade. She's less of a Tsunade character than she was in the first series. I mean, she still is the Tsunade character, especially compared with the others, but really when you look at her character, she's less Tsunade. You know, they add a softness, a gentleness to her character, and they do give her a couple outfits, including a maid outfit, which is kind of funny considering her, you know, color scheme, that whole black and white. And again, that's the other thing, especially when she's in that so-called maid outfit, you know, sort of the blue and white, can be also symbolized of that same mellowness I was talking about before. Kazahana, again, she doesn't get shown much in the first series. She really has those couple scenes towards the end. But she's very more prominent here because she becomes a secretary of Minato. Really just had a lot of fun, I think, with her character. Character design-wise, not much different. But, again, they do put her in different costumes. With the costumes she wears are hilarious. And, again, it's not much different, but again, we just see more of it because now she's a secretary of Minato. But that carnival costume that she gets from Uzume's closet, holy shit. And I'm sorry I cussed there. I had to, like, wow. That's one of the funniest bits of the whole series. We'll get more into that in the comedy. Homaru is really the character that changed the most because, again, for the most part in the first, he was portrayed as a guy. They hinted at something different in the final episode, but really we see it here to where they show him changing into a girl. And I really love how they do it as far as character designs, to where even when he changes, there's still this fully sort of, he's feminine but also masculine. And it's done in such a way to where, even though, yeah, he's grown boobs, you still don't know, is he a girl or is he a boy? And I just think the way they've handled his transformation and everything that happened in the series was very, very well done. Mia is Mia, really not much changed. They didn't really have to change anything. Again, still that whole maternal aspect to her character design. Uzume became a lot more serious. I think they used a bit more harder lines on her because, you know, her story became more serious, especially with what would happen with her dying in the series, which we'll get into when we get into story. You know, with that being said, her dying, you know, again, more harder lines to denote more of a serious aspect to her character. And then with the others, again, really not much has changed. There's just some characters that maybe have more screen time now, like the Discipline Squad and everything. Again, that whole aspect I said last week of the first season really just being a sort of introduction to all these characters, and now they're getting screen time. You don't have to go into the whole origin story of these characters. I do like that we see more Sekiris, and it's not that you just see more Sekiris and they're all the same. They're all these, you know, you see women with big boobs, you see women with small boobs. You see a lot of male Sekiris in this season, which I like. Again, it's showing the diversity of the Sekiris that are out there, considering there is 108 of them. So I like that very, very much. Moving on to special effects, and this is probably the most improved area of the show. Again, like I said, and you know, I'll talk about backgrounds as this as well, because it really does lead into both of them. Again, like I said, the background, a little bit of the softness was taken out of the backgrounds. They're still sort of soft colors and everything, but just not as soft. And when you add it to what they did with special effects, is what they really improved on the special effects. I think they took a lot of the contrast of the colors out, and so it blends. So, like, the water effects and everything, and there's still a brightness to it, but it's not so bright to where, like, to someone like me who's seen all this stuff and seen computer effects and has worked with computer effects, so yes, I know it's computer effects. But to the point, it's not so obvious that it's computer effects. You know, there is a blend to it that makes it seem distinct and everything, and really makes it work. You know, it's working with fire. It makes it, I think the best way I can see is, I think maybe they added a gradient or something, whatever they did, they were able to make these effects seem more hand-drawn. You know, whereas in the first season, like the lightning effects and the water effects and even the fire effects seemed very CG added on, you know, after the fact, here there was a lot more of a blend to it, and a lot of them did seem CG. You know, Kazahana's wind, Tsumi's water, Homaru's fire, you know, all of it seemed hand-drawn. So they really did a good job of blending it, which I very much like. And again, like I said, backgrounds, less soft, but overall, just love the background, still beautiful to look at. With that, we are going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a couple of promos for you. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and story.
The funeral is over. Jonathan Kent is on the mend.
So, how's Clark's father?
Oh, much, much better.
Lois has returned home.
Lois, over here!
Harry, wife? Since when did you start meeting your staff at the airport? How'd you know I was returning on that flight?
A good editor checks out his hunches, Lois. I got a hot story I want to run straight away. I'm parked over here.
But just as Metropolis has learned to live without the Man of Steel...
I know, there was only one Superman, but Metropolis just hit the jackpot. Because we got four Supermen now, and nobody knows which of them, if any, is the real McCoy.
Four beings of incredible power and intellect have laid claim to the Man of Steel's name.
The last son of Krypton.
I live.
The Man of Steel.
Man of Steel coming through! Nobody move! This is a bust!
The Cyborg.
Yes, I'm Superman. I'm back.
The Boy of Steel.
Put me down!
Listen, pal, don't ever call me Superboy. Capiche?
The reign of the Superman is upon us, and so from crisis to crisis, a Superman podcast begins its epic coverage of this last act in the epic Death and Return of Superman saga. Every week, Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor, along with the best and the brightest in the podcasting community, will cover this event in all of its forms, from the comics to the novelizations, to the audio drama, and beyond. Superman is back, but is any of them the real Man of Steel? Find out on From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, located at www.supermanhomepage.com and www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
December 7th,
Earth 2,
1941.
A world very much like our own, yet slightly different.
A date which will live in infamy.
A world at war.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
Following the Japanese sneak attack on Pearl Harbor, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt brought together the largest group of mystery men ever assembled to battle the Axis powers. Tales of the Justice Society of America presents the All-Star Squadron.
The Tales of the Justice Society of America, every Friday at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
In June of 1962, a superhero unlike any other made his first appearance in the pages of Amazing Fantasy number 15, the final issue of that series. 6 months later, this character would receive his own title, and from there he would grow in popularity and be adapted into several animated series, a handful of live-action series, both in the U.S. and abroad, have countless action figures made in his likeness, dominate the cinema screen, and much, much more. It is fair to say that the Amazing Spider-Man is a pop culture icon and a fictional character that people all over the world identify with and love. This year, Spider-Man is turning 50, and Views from the Long Box, an internet radio series hosted by me, Michael Bailey, is going to celebrate the wall crawler in a series of episodes focusing on various aspects of the character's existence. Together with such podcasting luminaries as Brad Douglas, Andrew Leyland, John Wilson, and Scott Gardner, I'm going to give Spidey the biggest birthday card a comic fan could. He may not be my favorite character, but I like him a great deal, and he deserves the spotlight in this, his 50th year. Views from the Long Box can be found at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. New episodes hit every Friday. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Bailey Tooth production in association with the DiMonzo Corps of Milan, Italy.
And welcome back, and let's get right into acting, shall we? Really a great job, again, by the entire cast. All of them, again, it's one of those things where, well, with the English dub cast, again, which I watched, it was a matter of, you know, they really did this all in sort of one line to an extent. I mean, they picked up Zachary, and then a couple months later, they picked up Zachary Pure Engagement. In fact, if my memory does serve me right, they picked up the licensing rights to Zachary Pure Engagement, I think right after Zachary, or at least to both the seasons, pretty much after Zachary the Pure Engagement debuted in the summer of 2010. So, for the most part, they didn't have that much of a gap, I think, between recording, because I think they recorded Zachary, and then they waited, I think, maybe 6 months before recording. I say that because the Japanese cast definitely had much more of a gap between recording time. Because you had the first season of Zachary came out in 2008. I think spring 2008, if I remember right. And then Zachary Pure Engagement here came out in 2010. But either way, you know, and they did a wonderful job in both, because I actually did listen to both the Japanese version and the American version, and both did a wonderful job there. And I do suggest listening for both these series, listening to both the Japanese and English version, because there are distinct differences that really, really make it interesting. Kazuhana has two distinct voices that make her very interesting. At least just the way her character is played by both. And Tsukumi, in the English version, it's old Shakespearean English. The reason they did that is because in the Japanese version, she's played as a character who speaks in old Japanese. which I think is actually pretty much the same thing, but it does have its distinct different, what makes it unique and enjoyable to watch and listen to, for that matter. But again, Joe McDonald does a wonderful, wonderful job playing Minato. I love how he shows the evolution of the character. Really, the evolution of Minato in this series, and how one of his aspects, as we'll get more into when we talk about story, is his growth as an Ashikabi and sort of understanding of the Sekiri plan and sort of more taking a more frontline stand against MIB and some of the other Ashikabis in the city, and standing up for his beliefs. And Joe McDonald does a wonderful job of portraying this very subtle evolution of his character, as you know, he's put into situations, and even though he's even scared in a lot of these situations, he's able to pull through and evolve. Alexis Tipton, again, does a wonderful job. I mean, let me say this. All of the characters show evolution to some sense. Again, it just depends on if the character needed a whole lot of evolution or little. You know, and a lot of that also had to do whether they were more focused on. You know, Kazuhana and Homaru had a lot more focus on them in the series, so they had a lot more evolution. Matsu and Musubi, not so much. Musubi, again, just her bubbly, sort of confident personality. And again, Alexis Tipton does a wonderful job. But there are some senses of more serious aspects to Musubi. One of them being early in the series to where she is facing off with Karasuba, which is the name, by the way, I kind of forgot earlier. But she is on the hospital rooftop with Karasuba. It's like, I smell blood. You killed again, didn't you? You know, and she does have that sort of inkling that, you know, even though she kind of does ignore it, she knows what Karasuba plan is. She knows that, you know, she wants to fight her. And sort of vice versa. Tia Ballard, again, I said earlier that whole aspect of it, you know, first series she seemed 4 or 5. This series she seems 6 or 7. A lot of it has to do with Tia Ballard, who does a great job voicing Kusuno. Again, there's just a... Kusuno is just one of the funniest characters in the series. All throughout the series, she has some of the funniest moments. The whole phone bit is hilarious as hell. We'll get to more on that when we get to comedy. But just a great job by Tia Ballard. Colin Klinkenbeard does a wonderful job as Matsu. You get really no change in her character, but she does it perfectly. And again, it's a refreshing feel to hear Colleen Klinkenbeard voice a character that isn't a serious, hard-nosed female character. It's refreshing to, you know, hear her really let loose in this sort of fun, sort of perverted character. Lita McKay does a wonderful job portraying the evolution of Tsumi. You know, again, in that whole meld out process. Stephanie Young makes me laugh so hard in her portrayal of Kazuhana. Because again, that character has just so many great funny moments. And again, and I don't know if it's her or if it's the writers for Funimation who did this, but again, just some of the ways she made the character her own. I think one instance of this that comes to mind is early on in the series when Minato gets kidnapped. And, you know, she has the hunch that, you know, she knows where he is. And, you know, she lands in the sake brewery. And she goes, bingo. That just, it's a little thing, but it just made the character her own. So for that, I really, really like it. Leah Clark is Homaru. Again, this adding a bit of femininity to this sort of masculine portrayal that she was doing of this male character, mind you, to really sort of show that evolution of the character and show him evolving. And I'll be able, hopefully able to ask Leah Clark this in a couple weeks when I see her at Anime Next. But just a great, I think it's, you see, just added a bit of femininity, just really show that evolution, that change of Homaru. That was really good. Monica Rial and Jamie Marchi did a wonderful, wonderful job as Mia and Uzume, especially Jamie Marchi. You know, her character had the most serious aspect in this series, and her death scene is just emotional. And she treated it with so much respect, and you know, she did just right. It had the right amount of temperament and tone that it needed to really be effective. So it was a wonderful job by Jamie Marchi. Going on to antagonists, again, really only two. Karasuba, just the way Christine Atune just does the coldness, I think she hit the right aspect. You know, very, I kind of joke about this, kind of very Steven Seagal-like in sort of the coldness of Karasuba. And it just adds, and really I think that's the right way to play that character, right? Is to play it very Steven Seagal-like, if that's a term that we can play. But sort of that cold and yet sort of every person aspect of her character, I think makes her character very, very dangerous. And then last but not least, we have Chuck Huber playing Hirota Minaka. And yeah, you've heard me say it before. The supervillain that from like a 1920s Superman comic and everything like that. I mean, especially when I see him later on in this season. That, you know, when I see Minika, I think of one word, and I think of no better way to emphasize this than with a song. So why did I play Mr. Anderson's theme song? Talking about Chuck Huber's portrayal of Hiroto Minika. Well, and by the way, this would be a great segue into talking about what happens with Story. But part of that reason is because he plays him as an asshole, which is the perfect way to do it. And you know what the difference between a mad scientist and an asshole is? A mad scientist does things that is part of the plan. You know, to quote Heath Ledger's Joker, it's all part of the plan. You know, it has the plan, and everything leads into the other. An asshole will put people in danger and for just his thrill, and really just do something just so he can use an escape pod. And that's what Minika does. The whole final fight, as it's... Don't get me wrong, he does have it set up that it leads into other stuff, so he does have that mad scientist aspect. But really, his whole way of doing it was just so he could get a chance to use his escape pod. He's an asshole! That is... Minika is an asshole! That is what he is, and Chuck Huber does a wonderful job of portraying him as an asshole. Just complete and utter dickery from this character, and it's so freaking hilarious. And like I said, it's really a great segue into Story. Because really the big thing to talk about here is the main plot and the darker tones of the Sentry series. You have Uzume's death, you know, the whole, her being forced to work for the I'm blanking on his name, or at least the pronunciation of it, from the East, forcing her to basically kill Zachary's for him that he, or at least that he deems is dangerous, to continue the cure that is keeping her Ashikabi alive. And then the whole aspect of that, you know, again, the asshole and dickery, again, he forces Minato and all his Zachary's to go through hell on his exploding tower of death to basically get a cure to save someone. And really, the only reason he did it because he wanted to further the Sekiri plan, no doubt, but that was already planned. He did it in this way, basically, because he wanted to use his escape pod. And again, that goes towards more of the comedic aspect, but definitely, there's more of a serious aspect of the main plot of the Sekiri plan, where, again, the whole aspect of these characters are going to have to fight each other. You know, Uzume is not another one of his secretaries. They're gonna have they did fight for that matter, but you know they were gonna have to fight sooner or later. You know they're gonna have to fight Seo sooner or later, and some of their other friends. And in fact, because it's a battle to be only one, his secretaries are eventually going to have to fight each other. The more serious aspects of the plan, and sort of more darker aspects of you, which really can be a great transition to the aspect of, you know, sort of how the darkness of love and what people have to do to sometimes be with the person they love. Sometimes they have to do things that they may not be okay with. You know, whether that be simply sharing the person they love or, you know, doing something that they're going to feel maybe dirty about later. And not dirty like sexual, but I mean like killing somebody. Just to beat or make someone they like happy. You know, that's a darker aspect of love that doesn't get talked about. And really, that can be sort of a translation of what's going on here. So definitely the darker tones here are definitely being felt in this series. And really, I think, puts a sort of prominent, you know, aspect to why this series is really well done. It has its comedy. And this really goes into what the fan service and the comedy in this series does. Both sort of the standard comedy, but also the fan service comedy with the boobs and everything. They lull you into the series. And it works both ways. The comedy and the fan service make it so that these really serious tones that are happening in this series, you know, they don't cut too deep. You know, it doesn't feel too, we're always on this dark topic. We're always on these serious tones. There's an aspect to, like, you know, you have a breather from talking about this subject through the comedy. At the same point in time, because of the comedy and the fan service for that matter, it lulls you into caring about these characters, and because you've had fun with these characters and you've gotten to know these characters, that when, for instance, when Uzume's death happens, and mind you, you've had an entire series to get and understand Uzume's character, even though they hinted at the things happening, showed you things happening, they really got you to know her character. And because of that, when they kill her, you know, her death feels organic, it feels natural, and it really has meaning and, you know, weight to it when it happens. This isn't just, hey, let's kill the character off, you know, for the fun of it to make our main characters feel sad. And yes, I'm looking at you, Code Geass, Death Note, and Gurren Lagann when I say that. You know, they're actually killing a character. You know, it's funny, I actually have to make the comparison here since it just came out. But it's like Coulson's death. Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen Avengers. Though, considering how much money it is, there's like only 3 people on the planet who haven't seen the movie. At least to those who have access and actually care about the movies. But, you know, spoiler alert, Coulson's death actually has meaning and weight to it. It felt important. It wasn't cheap. Same thing here. Uzume's death scene, it's just saddening. And at the same point in time, it also, I'm blanking on the word here, but, you know, again, it shows you what her character was. You know, she was doing these horrible things, but when her friend was in danger, you know, she instinctively jumped in the way and sacrificed herself to, you know, save them. And which led in turn to, you know, Minako making that promise, you know, taking care of her Asakabi. And there was such weight and sadness, but at the same point in time, it just really hammered home this. It was just perfectly well done, and I really, really enjoy it. Yeah, again, talking about the progress of the Sekri plan, the darker aspect, as we talked before, but again, and also the hint of what's to come, because, you know, again, in the manga, after these events happen, they start the third match, which is more one-on-one fights. It also leads to the introduction of these artifacts known as Jinkies. They don't talk about this in the series, but, you know, they hint at it. And so I do love how they're showing how this plan is progressing. And I kind of like how, you know, everything that's been happening has sort of been put in place to move the plan along. On a more lighter note, and, you know, I was talking about it earlier, the comedy and the fan service, but I talked to more of a sort of story editorial aspect. But the fan service and comedy here, just so many great bits. I talked about the phone bit earlier, but, you know, with Kusuno, Matsu, and Kazahana, you know, the phone rings, you guys, it just hurts totally. And Mitsubara, you know, go, put the big boob chick on, the one with the pneumatic knockers. And Kusuno looks up and she's like, all the Sekris in the house, pretty much, with the exception of Homaru and Mia, have big knockers. It's like, no, put on number 88. And so she starts counting. It's so cute and adorable and hilarious. And you go, who is this? Oh, man, put somebody else on. Okay, click. And Matsumara losing her mind. It's, what? Oh my god! I can't believe it! Ah! Ah! And I don't know why it's so hard to see her lose her mind. And then Kazuhana picks up and is like, well, am I not good for you? You're a super bitch. Click. And it's just a funny bit. Kazuhana in the carnival dress and ha-cha-cha-cha, ha-cha-cha-cha. Just some of the bits that just made me laugh. I love them. And again, I love how, you know, even in a serious moment, the way they sort of cut the tension is, you know, they'll do something comedic, you know, the whole, and go back to the whole competition between the or at least between Tsukumi and the other Sekiris, sort of cut the tension. It was really well done, and I really, really enjoyed the fan service. Again, series pace was absolutely wonderful. You know, again, I really didn't feel like anything was out of place. And again, it is another aspect to where really the only thing I feel like I can complain is that it's only 13 episodes, but that's not something with pace. I just want more, because it is so perfectly paced. You know, everything flows, every part of the story, you know, flows out naturally, and that, I think, really helps the series. Final thing to talk about is the fights. And I think the fights were really well done. I really believe you had a lot more fights in this series, especially some one-on-one aspect to it, and they were extremely well done. They were very enjoyable. I could follow everything that was happening, and just a great use of what each Sekiri's strength was. So I very, very much enjoyed that. I also very enjoyed the very final fight, to where it was Karasuba and, you know, Musubi, you know, face off, and sort of that sort of samurai duel-esque type of aspect that led to the winner. So I very much liked the fights. Final thoughts on Sekiri. This is a great second season, and ultimately when it comes to the ending of the season, it was a great sort of double ending. And I say double ending on the aspect of, like, it's an ending that could really stand as an ending to the series if no more seasons are made. But at the same point in time, the aspects are put in there so that they can continue the series as the manga goes along. You know, in some of the commentary tracks that, you know, they've heard of a third season being made, for whatever reason, if it's been announced, I can't find any news articles on it. I hope a third season is being made, because I definitely want to see more of these characters. You know, I enjoy being around these characters and watching their story and watching them grow. So I definitely want to see more. I want to know more about Mia and everything, and want to see when she eventually joins the group. Because I think ultimately down the line, Mia's going to join the group at some point. I mean, I know some things about the character from the manga that hasn't been put in the series, so again, I won't spoil that stuff. But even with knowing that stuff, which is important to know, yeah, I really am interested to see what happens with her character and what happens with all the characters. So I think this is a much better. I think this is, again, one of the better series that's come out in the past couple years. Definitely pick it. You know what? Especially, it's a DVD, Blu-ray, you know, combo pack for $45. Well, at least that's what I paid for at Best Buy. I think it's definitely worth it. Definitely check it out. So, Sekiri Pure Engagement, 5 out of 5 for me. And that is it for at least the next 3 weeks of Tom's Prerogative. Because again, remember, I'm going to be at Wizard World Philly. I will also be at Anime Next the second week of June. So, pretty much 3 weeks, I'm going to be at conventions. But hopefully, I will have content after that for you. And you'll just be seeing tons of content being put on the site. So remember, if you have any comments, fan mail, email, or any, you know, comments about the shows I've reviewed, remember there are several ways you can reach us. First, you can email us at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also like our Facebook page and leave us a message there by searching out Absolution Network on Facebook. And also, you can leave a comment on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, while you're at it, remember to check out all the other sites of mine that I do for 132 Productions, along with other 132 Production sites, like Random Red Box Reviews, which you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.132productions.com. And, of course, the Otaku Momentum, which is here on the Absolution Network. And, of course, like I said, my sites, like Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast where I review every Godzilla movie ever made. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, Comic Book Crazy, which features Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, Comic Book Pitch. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, remember to check out all our friends, which you can find on the sidebar of all our sites. People like Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, and from Crisis Crisis, which he does with Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Stryker's Major Spoilers Podcast, and Scott Gardner's Two Freaks! And all our other friends, which you can find on the aforementioned sidebar of the site. And like I said, that's it for the next 3 weeks, pretty much. They're not going to be for you next week, and of course, next 2 weeks, I'm just probably going to be tired from the conventions I'm going to. So in 3 weeks, not only will I hopefully have a new review for you, but I will also hopefully have convention content for you. So until the end of June, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
By DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.